Thank you very much, Alejandro. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and share this kind of rough piece of work with y'all on the factors that are basically looking at the cropping mix between feed grains, oil seeds, and cotton in the Mississippi Delta. And as I said, it's a pretty rough study. Hopefully it'll be a compliment to the good work that was done from folks at LSU that presented that poster yesterday, and the work that Brother John Robinson presented yesterday morning. And one of the errors that I had on the program before we started was I want to recognize my co-author, Dr. Steve Martin, and we had on there that Steve was at Stoneville. Since before we posted the paper here, Steve's took the job of being the head of the Verona station in Mississippi, so he since moved on, and we certainly miss him. But the gist of the paper is that we've seen pretty sharp drop in cotton acreage, over 500,000 acres if you look at the average for the first 5 years of the last 10, going to the second 5 years of the last 10, and that's put a lot of pressure on the industries that are supporting the cotton industry in the Mississippi Delta. And that trade-off's basically been acres going to corn and going to soybeans, with the majority of that acreage shifting over to corn. So in this paper, what we were going to try to do is take a rough cut at the returns, risk-adjusted for dry land and irrigated cotton, corn, and soybean production, and see what we could develop to maybe help develop an outlook for what the acreage might be here in 2013. Now, going over a bit of plowed ground here, this is the cropping mix that we've seen in the Mississippi Delta, and we're defining the Delta here as Mississippi Ag Statistics Service reporting districts 10 and 40. It's a 12 county area. The actual Delta in Mississippi is a little bit larger than that, but for statistical reporting and the purposes of this paper, we thought it'd be best to limit the area to that. If you notice, back in 2009, cotton acreage fell as low as about 180,000 acres in this area before it bounced back in response to the better cotton prices that we saw in the couple of subsequent years. Right here, and once again going over a little bit of plowed ground here, I wanted to present the net reported acres insured for those selected crops in the Mississippi Delta. And the reason that I had to do this was that, unlike some other states, in Mississippi, the Agricultural Statistics Service didn't really keep close track, and neither did Farm Service Agency, of irrigated acres until recently. And they're still working on trying to perfect those estimates. So I was forced here for 2011 and 2012 to look at the net reported acres insured by crop and practice between irrigated and dry land. One of the things I wanted to point out here is a relatively sharp increase in irrigated acres in the Delta, and this actually has slowed just a little bit going from 2011 to 2012, but even there was a 15% increase in irrigated acres, in rough numbers about 180,000 acres, and that trend is still increasing. And when we look at some of the cost structures, some of the expected returns, it becomes pretty evident why that's happening, and it's starting to cause some concern regarding the aquifer, in particular areas in the Mississippi Delta. But as you can see here, these folks are primarily soybean farmers, and the acres that we saw to corn going from 2011 to 2012 was about flat. I think when we look at some of the yield results that we'll present here in a minute, you can kind of see why that probably happened. And given the results that we're expecting for 2012 in this study, like I said before, is a bit of a rough study where we may be underestimated the yields, looking at our 2012 projections. Given what actually happened in 2012 with their excellent feed grain yields, I think I might be winding up in a Goldilocks situation where between the two, may be just about right. But in this paper, what we use for our economic measures is basically returns above total specified expenses. It's what y'all seen generated from Mississippi State Budget Generator over the years. It's basically a net above direct costs and prorated fixed expenses, as you can see here. On the revenue side of it, we've abstracted away from the government payments and insurance payments. And I think on an intra-farm allocation, given the price levels that we've seen, lack in the last year marketing loan gains or deficiency payments, I think we're okay there. One of the things that we are blessed with in Mississippi is the Mississippi Agriculture and Forestry Experiment Station carries out cropping practice surveys every year for four or five of the major crops. And this is done in contract with the Mississippi Tax Commission. And these surveys are one of the primary sources of information to generate agricultural use values for taxation purposes. It's a very rich database. And from this, in a perfect world, what I would have been able to do is just take that yield information, the cost information, the return information, summarize that, and present a plot. I think that would certainly tell a story that we would expect to see, but life's not perfect. So as in a practical sense, and you can certainly see why the survey's carried out this way, is that costs between irrigated and dry land production aren't segregated out. And as surveying the producers for the purposes that this survey's carried out, you could think that that would be pretty burdensome on somebody that would be replying to a survey to have to break those things out. So kind of looking at the choice of the lesser of two evils, instead of going out and trying to prorate those costs back, split them out, as Brother John pointed out yesterday, quite rightly, that the irrigated part of it is going to have to carry the lion's share of that burden. And most of the folks, the lion's share of the folks that respond to the survey have both dry land and irrigated acres. So like I said, I had the choice of going back there trying to doctor that up or just try to go in and pick a representative cost structure for dry land and irrigated production for all three of these crops and use that in the simulation. So this is the method that we used. I think there's probably bigger faults in the study than that. And y'all can take a whack at me when I get done here and feel free to point them out. But basically, on the cotton side of it, I feel pretty good about the representative cost structures that we used. It's pretty close on the yield goals that we were looking at. Both of them are using genetically modified cotton. Both of them using 12 row 38 inch equipment. The yield goals are going to be pretty close to what the average goals, the average yields that I have used in the simulation. So long story short, we're looking at about $670 an acre for total specified expenses for the dry land production. We're looking at about $832 an acre for the irrigated production costs, using about 10.5 acre inches of water, and pricing the cotton at 68 cents a pound and using $240 a ton for our cottonseed yield credit. As you would expect in a normal year, that you're going to probably see the biggest variation in your dry land feed grain production, and this was the case here. Once again, using the cost structures here, I probably overestimated the target here on our production for dry land and irrigated production, as we'll see in a minute. Once again, looking at about $455 an acre of total specified expenses for dry land corn production, looking at about $660 an acre for our irrigated corn production, and pricing the corn at about $6.80, and making the major adjustments there on our harvesting costs. Soybean production, basically switching here from 12 row 38s to 12 row 20s, looking about $225 an acre for the total specified production costs for dry land beans, and about $358 an acre for our irrigated beans. And price in the beans this year at $16 a bushel, which was the kind of weighted average price in the Greenville, Greenwood, and Cleveland marketing area. Matching that up with the summary statistics coming out of the 2011 MAFIS cropping practice survey, you can see on average I'm pretty close on the cotton, pretty close on the irrigated yields on the cotton also, but I'm much further away on what I was expecting for the corn. About, we were budgeting about 125 bushels an acre and about 100 for the dry land, about 185 bushels an acre for the irrigated corn. And that was the point that I was attempted to make earlier on probably overestimating the cost of production there a little bit. But when we go forward and look at what we're expecting for 2013, I think that will probably wash out. And once again, very close on the soybeans, very close on the dry land, and about 3 bushels an acre differential on the irrigated soybeans. Once again, a graph very much like you'd expect, the results coming out of the cropping practice survey. Out of all the three crops, the cotton, I would expect to have the least amount of variability, dry land and irrigated. On the corn, and once again, a shortcoming in the study is that I didn't make an assumption on what I was going to truncate the low ends of these distributions on with respect to crop insurance. But I don't have a lot going on at the low end of these distributions, so I think I'm okay there. I would have had to make some sort of estimate on what my on where I'd be setting my yield protection levels, and going back and trying to come up with a set of yields that would be representative for the area to price that off of, I was afraid would just muddy the water here. But once again, you see the kind of thing that I would expect going into a particular area on the feed grains, being able to get water to it has a bigger payoff with respect to any of these, and a little bit less variation on the soybeans. Well, kind of so what? If we take a look at it, particularly on the irrigated side, there's major advantages to irrigated corn and soybean productions at the price levels that we've seen here lately. And that goes a long way into explaining the increase in irrigated acreage in the Delta, I believe. It's a trend that we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years, and I think will probably continue going forward here. You see the highest amount of variation in dry land feed grain production, particularly corn. That would also be something that I would expect. But long story short here, there's about $300 an acre at these price levels that the cotton would have to make up to be competitive with the corn, now, of course, and soybeans. And, of course, we've seen those prices adjust some. Well, if we take a look at our cumulative distributions for returns here for the three crops, we see on the dry land side of it that the soybeans are going to display first-degree stochastic dominance over the cotton, and probably second-degree stochastic dominance if you want to, again, grant me the fact that I didn't truncate these yields on the low side. I did have some zero yields for the feed grains, as y'all recall. So given those results, you'd certainly expect to see the cropping patterns that we do. On the irrigated side of it, once again, if you look, we're dominating cotton with both crops at these price levels. And that's what you'd expect to see. There's some work that was done by our good friend Fred Cook and Steve Martin, and it would track that. It would support this conclusion here that when you start irrigating, you're going to get less of a gain in cotton. Matter of fact, you can even foul it up in an area that gets as much rain as the Mississippi Delta. So where would we have to be at current price levels, dry land and irrigated? If you bumped the cotton price to 79 cents a pound and held the seed credit constant, it would get you in a race here on the dry land side of the equation. When we look at our irrigated statistics, we'd have to be somewhere up around 96 and a half cents a pound. And you hear these numbers thrown around quite a bit in the time that I've been in a Delta, that, you know, it would have to be somewhere in the low 90 cent a pound to get the interest in planting cotton again. Like I said, there's a lot of there's certainly a lot of shortcomings in this study, but if you look at the acreage response that we've seen in the past several years here to the price and cost structures and the increase in irrigated acreage that's occurred in the Delta, it would certainly be justified looking at from the point of view of a risk-neutral, profit-maximizing decision-maker. Once again, the levels of magnitude that we're talking about would probably justify that 5-to-1 ratio that you see in dryland soybean acreage to dryland corn and dryland cotton production in 2012. Looking forward, if you're going to price beans at about $12 a bushel, you'd knock roughly $200 an acre off, but you'd still be having about $138 an acre advantage to soybean production, and knocking $1 a bushel off the corn, you'd be still looking pretty much at the same sort of scenario you are now. So at that point, that's all I've got on this. If, any questions, Alejandro? Thank you all very much. Yes, sir.
What would you land cost?
These were on this we abstracted. Wait, what we use was our total specified expenses, and that's basically a net return to land and some management factors. We'd be land and overhead. So if we were looking at cash rents at the median on the irrigated acres, I've run some of those numbers, but it would bump up as high as $230 an acre. Very, very high return.
Was that included in your when you ran the spreadsheet with the land cost in there?
Not this particular one, no sir. It was a residual, but I've got that information available if you want to email me at the center. Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry. If you have other questions, please jot them down, and we can have a Q&A session at the end of all the six presentations we will have.